Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Good morning and welcome to Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx Speaker, Business Positioning Strategist, and author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 70 countries, such as the United States, United Kingdom, Canada, Malaysia, India, Japan, and all across Europe. So I want to thank you to those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight that transformational moment that has changed our lives and how we use this to then transform others and elevate their lives as well. You can listen to us right here live on the Blog Talk Radio Network Tuesday through Friday. Join our Facebook community, Life Transformation Radio Community, and you can interact and talk with the guests that I bring on the show. I ask that you subscribe to Life Transformation Radio wherever you're comfortable listening to podcasts. We are available on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, Player FM, Radio Public, Overcast, CastBox, the Himalaya app, and Google Play Music app. I ask that you please subscribe to the show. The guests that I bring on the show are entrepreneurs, speakers, business owners, coaches, other podcasters, and authors who are amazing at what they do and are having an impact in their sphere of influence. And my guest today does exactly that. If you have any questions for any of the guests that I bring on the show during our live broadcast, you can call us up at 657-383-1109. Again, the number to call in, 657-383-1109. And with that, please help me welcome to the show my friend James Garrett. What's up, my friend?
How you doing, Sean?
Dude, I'm super, super pumped to have you on the show finally. Like, this is gonna be an amazing show. Amazing, amazing show.
Thanks, dude. I'm so excited to be on. This is gonna be great.
So we connected in a couple different ways, you know, most notably that I had done a TEDx talk called Hacking Your Brain for Success, and then I found out what you do, and I was like, what? And then just the fact that I knew some of the things that, because you are like a really, really smart dude. And in a conversation with you, I don't know if you know this, but in a conversation with you, you have a way of bringing a person into the conversation and not making them feel like they don't belong in the conversation. You know what I mean? Like, I knew kind of what you were talking about, and it wasn't like you were talking down like, well, I've done this. And, you know, like, you ever get into those conversations and they start using these really long words and you're like,
for
really?
Sure.
Like,
for sure.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So in talking with you, man, I feel super comfortable talking with you. And then we connected and you know, at a bunch of different events that we were at. And, I'm super pumped to have you on the show because I believe that talking about our brain's neuroplasticity that has to do with positive psychology research studies is going to help people understand why they do what they do, how they do what they do, and maybe there's a way that they can counteract some of the bad habits that they have.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. That's so kind of you to say. I'm so glad that was your experience. I you know, for me, it's like brain science doesn't have to be complicated. You know, when you just kind of have some basics about your operating system, it doesn't have to be jargony. It doesn't have to be technical. It can be really simple and really straightforward. And that's sort of what I hope to communicate.
Well, you definitely did. And just that I could keep up in the conversation with you, you know, that was awesome to me, you know. So let's get into it. This show is titled Hacking Your Brain with brain hacker James Garrett. James Garrett is a brain hacker and founder of Brain by Design. He's spoken on stages ranging from Harvard to TEDx, and his work has been featured by the New York Times, Fast Company, and Harvard Business Review. He spent years doing research with some of the best psychologists in the world at Columbia, Tufts, and Yale. He built one of the only brain-based positive psychology curricula in the Middle East and trained thousands of Arab youth in partnership with Queen Rania of Jordan, a rare combination of scientist, trainer, and entrepreneur. In 2019, James launched the Deep Change Project, a year-long personal journey to discover what's possible at the outer edges of brain hacking and neuroplasticity. The Facebook and the LinkedIn are right there in the show notes. Connect with him to learn more about Brain by Design and Deep Change Project. You can also click on the links that are hyperlinked in the show notes. So, my friend, the first question I have to ask is, why neuroplasticity? What got you into this? What is your deep why for what you do?
Such a good question. You know, for me, I've always, I sort of fell in love with this during college. You know, I grew up in a home that wasn't, you know, my dad didn't graduate college. I didn't grow up in a house full of books, right? And so it wasn't that my mom and dad were necessarily, they were great parents, but they weren't necessarily, kind of introducing me to ideas about how this stuff worked. And so in some sense, as a kid, I was kind of an intuitive psychologist. I liked watching behavior. I was really fascinated by behavior. I was really fascinated by animal behavior as well as human behavior. And I stumbled onto a book when I was in college called The Brain That Changes Itself by Norman Doidge. And it's really one of the best books out there on how the brain can rewire itself. And the deeper I dove into it, the more I realized that this is not just sort of good news, it's revolutionary news, right? The fact that
yes,
we can fundamentally rewire our own brains, that change is not only possible, it's knit into the logic of our neurons, is something that I think most people don't think about that much, first of all. And then
right,
the other side of it is what it evokes for me is an emotion of hope. You know, you know, we all, I think, long to be the kind of best versions of ourselves, right? And we have these better and worse moments. And I think one of the most kind of disappointing or kind of frustrating worldviews is what Carol Dweck, the Stanford psychologist, would call like a fixed mindset. This idea that we're sort of born with a certain amount of intelligence, a certain amount of ability, a certain amount of talent, and that there's not much you can do to change that. It's knit in your genetics, right? And then the flip side of that, the other side of that coin, the other belief, the other worldview, the other framework, the other mental model to bring to that same question of is intelligence growable is what she calls a growth mindset. And so a growth mindset is this belief that with effort, I can change. Right, that what I become is up to how hard I pursue something, or how hard I try, or how much effort I put into something. And it's interesting how belief and biology interplay here. But basically, what she's found is she's of course working with young kids in this in school. Originally, it was around achievement. They call it achievement motivation in the literature, and what she found is kids who believe that they could get better at math when they hit frustrating, you know, things they didn't understand, like, you know, algebra, some piece of crazy algebra or something. If they had this belief that they could improve with practice, then they would actually put forth the necessary effort and time and energy toward getting better at it. And if they had the belief that, you know, math ability was something you were born with, and there's smart kids and sort of average kids and not so smart kids at that subject, then everything became about proving why you were the best at what you do and not about improve. It was about proving, not improving, right?
Right.
And so it had this sense of your kind of sense of self or identity was wrapped up in being smart or being the best at, because if it was true that you weren't getting it quickly and easily, then that was a threat to your sense of identity, sense of self. And so it all becomes all about protecting that and sort of not and making it feel and sort of presenting the kind of veneer of it looking like it's easy for you. Whereas people with, again, kids with a growth mindset, they would see challenge as some, they would see sort of things that were difficult as a challenge, as something, as mastery, as sort of like, wow, that's exciting. It would actually light them up when they didn't get something. Whereas again, the kids who had this fixed mindset, it would kind of threaten them and they would go into lockdown. Right. And so they'd avoid it and say the teacher's stupid or the, and so anyway, this research was, which is again about belief, underlies these sort of two roads to neuroplasticity. And so if you believe that you can't change, right, that sort of you're born with a certain amount of talent or intelligence or whatever, or ability, you don't simply put forth the necessary effort to create that change. And if you believe you can change, which again, the science has shown emphatically that we can, you will put forth the necessary effort, time, and persistence to actually become that new version of yourself. And it's incredibly inspiring, incredibly hopeful. So that's my why.
I love it. The research that's out there is so compelling. And one of the research studies that I used inside of my TEDx talk was the London cab driver research. And when I had read about this, oh my gosh, this was the heart of my talk. You know, I had teed it up a little bit through, you know, you got to know what's in your brain and why you act the way that you do. And, you know, and why you think, feel, and believe about the world. Like, where does it come from? Like how does it happen? And then, once we know, you know, how we are and where it comes from, either our parents ingrained it in us or, you know, we believe these certain things because of, you know, radio and television or whatever, you can then start to rewire because you know where you are. Now you can figure out where you want to go. You can just rewire it. And so they had taken these 73 cab drivers and then MRI'd their brains and then taken a group of other people, like 37 or whoever, 37 other people, and then MRI'd their brains. And the ones that passed this, I mean, it's super hard. I think it said like 12 times it could take someone to pass the London of the Knowledge of London examination system to become a London cab driver. The ones that passed actually rewired their brains by instituting daily habits for memorization, and they actually changed the neuroplasticity of their brain in the cerebral cortex. So where spatial navigation and everything else is controlled, they actually had habits that actually rewired their brain, grew the hippocampus, and they rewired their brain's nerve structure, and they passed. Not 12 times. They passed 2, 3, or 4 times or whatever. The guys who didn't pass or the guys who took 12 times didn't institute any habit. They just winged it. I thought that was so compelling. How many times have we winged something in life? You know, and we didn't grow from it.
Right. Well, winging, it's such a great, that's such a great way to phrase it. Because I think winging it is how a lot of us live our own growth process. We kind of wing it.
Yep.
And winging it when it comes to rewiring your brain kind of doesn't cut it, you know?
Right.
And what I mean by that is, you know, Sharon Bagley and Jeffrey Schwartz and others have sort of coined this term self-directed neuroplasticity.
Mm-hmm.
There's this kind of new skill set, you know, the new skill set, I would argue, is self-directed neuroplasticity, getting good at actually getting in the driver's seat of rewiring your own brain, actually knowing which levers to pull and which buttons to push in order to accelerate or sort of turn up the volume on the pace and intensity of that change process. So winging it isn't going to get you there. The brain, you know, some of these knobs and levers that kind of kickstart that attention process. For example, one of the biggest ones is attention.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of people are talking about meditation and mindfulness, for example, in terms of the stress reduction benefits, which are amazing. But what not a lot of people are talking about are the neuroplasticity acceleration benefits.
Yeah.
Because if you can direct your attention and really get good at sort of harnessing that power. And so whatever you're focusing on, you know, Eric Anders and others call this deliberate practice, you know, whatever you're doing, you're really kind of zoned in really deeply. Cal Newport calls it deep work, right? You sort of really dial in on that thing and you kind of tune out all other distractions. You know, we live in a kind of hyper distracted world, things that are kind of systematically eroding, quite frankly, that attentional capacity. And it's really our attention, our ability to direct our attention, that makes us uniquely human. This is, you know, in some sense, this largely consciousness is this process, our ability to kind of prioritize what we're paying attention to. And if we choose to, in a moment, actually tune out consciously a particular distraction, right? So,
right.
So in a sea of a war for our attention, right? There's all this vying via the internet and our phones and everything else for attention. Again, the new skill set is learning how to grow that capacity in a way that allows you to dial it in. So when you're exercising and you're, you know, they've even done studies where they'll show where if your mind is somewhere else while you're exercising, you don't get quite as much benefit. So if you're doing, you know, curls, for example, and you're really focusing on your biceps, for, you know, and the intensity of that movement, you're actually, because your attention is sort of basically signaling to the brain body connection, hey, whatever we're focusing on, that's important, and invest more resources in it. Again, attention is sort of like it's sort of your way of telling your brain and the rest of your body, hey, pay attention, this is important, i.e. invest more resources.
Right. Yeah. And that's why Tony Robbins always talks about where focus goes, energy flows. And even more so, what you focus on will expand in many different ways. Like on the back of the Axe soap is an actual research study that was done. And this speaks to your point. They took five women and said, here they are, here's 10 people. It took five women and they said, pick out the ones that were sprayed with Axe, except they were watching a video. That's what they were doing. They were watching a video. And so five guys were sprayed with water and five guys were sprayed with Axe. And they were told, look, I'm going to spray you with water. You are going to get the Axe. So you're going to spray. Then I want you to make a video to any girl telling them why they should date you. And all five women picked out the five guys that had Axe because they said, but they didn't tell them that it was going to make a video. They were like, you're going to talk to girls and you're going to tell them why they should date you. But they never said in a video. There was like, you're going to talk to these girls. So let's practice, you know? And so they tricked them into, oh, okay. You know, they said that the ones that were sprayed with Axe had more confidence and more, ability to be more attractive, but they had never smelled them. And so it was like this Axe effect is like, well, I feel good because of something that has happened. I get sprayed with Axe. I smell good. Therefore, inherently, I have some confidence or whatever. So it speaks to your point with this growth mindset. You know, it takes one thing, one task, tool, tip, whatever, a catalyst, if you will, to change the way that you think about yourself, to get out of that fixed mindset and get into a growth mindset. And so
right.
they had found that when that happens, you know, we start to grow, and where focus goes, your energy will inherently flow.
Absolutely. I love that quote by Tony Robbins. There's a very similar quote from Daniel Siegel, who's a brilliant author and scientist. He actually says, where attention goes, neural firing flows, and
oh, I love it.
And neural connections grow.
Oh, I love it. That's amazing. But it's so true.
So he's right. So Tony Robbins is of course right in what he's saying. On sort of the behavioral and motivational level. But then if you look at the biology kind of under a microscope, what's actually happening mechanistically is if you're paying attention to something, that's where your neurons will become more activated. You're sort of priming them because you're paying more attention to them, and because they're firing more frequently, just your brain is use dependent. So if you're using a certain area, it will invest more resources, create new connections, myelinate those paths, and get them stronger and stronger and stronger.
Yeah, and that's why they say that multitasking is a bad way to go. You know, we used to multitask. That was a big thing back in the early 2000s. You know, you got to be a multitasker, you know, especially, you know, when you're joining the military. When you're joining the military, you got to be doing a bunch of different things, and you got to multitask. And I was always like, oh, I can multitask. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can multitask. And then 5 years ago, when I got into the resilience realm, it was crazy when a study came out and said that when you multitask, you actually lose 36% of your productivity. I was like, what? And then as you dig in, you end up task switching. You're not actually doing anything. You're not actually accomplishing anything. You're just – you have so many tasks that you're trying to do at the same time that nothing ends up getting done. So if you focus on one thing, if you focus on one task – then you'll get that done. Then you can put your full energy and attention towards that one task. And so the whole multitasking notion of how we should live our life was actually debunked. And then I was like, well, crap, all right. I guess I'm not going to multitask anymore.
Yeah, and
crap.
It's worse.
But I see it.
Right. No. Well, it's because our brains – tell us when you've got that much to do. Again, our brain is kind of feeding us this kind of erroneous, this wrong-headed idea that if you have that much to do, you should do it all at the same time. So your brain kind of cues you up. It's when brains get stressed, they start multitasking. Is one way to think of it, right? When you're trying to run out, if you're trying to run out the door, just this morning I got my 5-year-old, ready for kindergarten, and it was, you made her lunch and other things. And I could sense like my stress elevating. And whenever I do that, it's like a 1-2 punch. When my stress elevates, my brain is like, multitask, you're going to get done faster. It's almost like, teasing me. Right.
Yep.
And I have to, consciously stick to one thing at a time. Nope, I'm doing her hair. I'm doing, whatever. And then we'll move on to fixing her lunch. And you know what I mean? It's sort of like it has to go in sequence. The brains work best sequentially, not simultaneously.
Interesting. So tell us a transformational moment that changed your life, which then put you on the path to what you're doing today.
Yeah. So I spent 6 years in the Middle East, 2009 to 2015. And we started out originally as Peace Corps volunteers. We were working on a very grassroots level. We started out in a little tiny 3,000 or 4,000 person, village up on the Syrian border of Jordan. You know, we were in Jordan, didn't know any Arabic, living with the host family,
drinking
a lot of tea, a lot of head shaking and smiling and awkward, embarrassed, kind of, you know, trying
right.
to just connect on that very human level. On the other
I
hand,
know how that
is very beautiful, right? And very, very human. And then we went from there to a mid-sized city called Salt, and worked in schools. And I worked in a youth center, working with young men from basically ages 12 to 18. And then we basically built something over the period of time, which was a brain-based curriculum, taking this kind of all this cutting-edge science and trying to make education, kind of bring it to life, teaching creativity, critical thinking, innovation, these sort of cognitive and mindset side of innovation and creativity and building things in the world. And we expected to come back after 2 years because that's how long Peace Corps is as a program. But our curriculum started getting noticed, and we met the Queen, and a whole host of things happened. And she wanted us to partner with one of her organizations, and start getting this into more schools. So anyway, we did that. We came home, founded a nonprofit organization, and went back, raised a little bit of money, went back, and then built that out for 4 more years. So that's the broad strokes of kind of what happened. And then over that time, we just kept growing and growing and growing. We you know, at our peak, we kind of had a staff of about 17 people and all these partners and funders and just all sorts of pressure, right? We were social entrepreneurs. And so that what ended up happening was, from the outside, if you're looking at it from the outside in, everything looked great. You know?
Okay.
You know, all these, we were awarded with the Draper Richards Kaplan Fellowship, and we were twice invitees to the Clinton Global Initiative and sort of these awards.
Wow.
And Harvard Arab Weekend, and we were TEDx speakers and, you know, whatever, just all these things kept happening. Right. So again, from the outside in,
looked amazing.
Like, amazing, right? Thomas Friedman wrote about us in the New York Times. It was a little bit crazy, right? And but from the inside out, it was a disaster. Meaning,
really,
we were so stressed. And my wife and I were co-running the organization together. We were co-founders and co-executive directors. We were so stressed over such a long period of time that we were chronically, we were doing what every stress researcher says not to do, which is stress your body out over long periods of time. It's like a recipe for bad health and over time, like breakdown of your body, right? And you know, we were surviving on stress and Pepsi. I mean, that was like the, you know, I wasn't exercising. I mean, if you look at the like behaviors in my life, I wasn't exercising. My sleep was compromised meaningfully. I wasn't reading. I was, again, the kind of main ingredient in my day that kept me going was Pepsi. So it's caffeine and sugar. I just became this kind of version of myself that I almost didn't recognize, right? And not that I couldn't kind of hold it together when I needed to, but like, again, I was much more edgy. I was much more, I was just this, not this great version of myself. And here I was, you know, needing to be a leader and the best version of myself, right? Think with a calm head and other things. And I just wasn't, I just don't think I was, at my best. And so, and it wasn't, and so we got home in 2015, summer of 2015, back to the States, and we went in to kind of see a doctor and do some kind of healing of our bodies and our minds. And I had adrenal fatigue. We both had adrenal fatigue. So our hormones were totally all out of whack. I'd really kind of crazy low. Like when I'd wake up in the morning, I had just no energy because I'd burned out my adrenals. And I was at least 20, 25 pounds overweight. I was, my testosterone was completely, gone. I was through the floor. So I just completely destroyed my body, you know? And it took us about a year to like get our health back, to start exercising, to start meditating, to start doing the things that to reconnect with ourselves and reconnect with the world, you know. And I just kept thinking, do you have to kill yourself in order to do some to build something in the world, right?
Right, right, right.
You have to go so hard that you destroy the thing that's bringing something else to life, namely yourself, right? And so here I was kind of in this question. And so I just went back to the science and the psychology and the brain stuff, which is what I had known before, and looking for answers. And so I spent about 2 years just diving into it, book after book after book after book after book, after
yeah,
looking at the research around burnout and looking at the research around resilience and looking at the research around willpower and motivation and habit formation. And suddenly I started realizing, oh, there's a much better way to do this.
Right. And yep. Yep.
It doesn't look like go, go, go. It looks like go, recharge, go, recharge, go, recharge.
Yep.
It's a sprint,
yep,
break, sprint, break, sprint, break model, not a hustle until you're dead model.
Oh, yeah. And that's what everybody's getting on, you know, the big influencers right now is everybody's like, oh, the hustle porn, more hustle porn. Here we go, you know. But
yes.
I think honestly, I mean, what are we going to tell baseball coaches or football coaches in high school? Do we tell them to stop hustle? Like, hustle off the field, hustle up. You know, like, do we tell them to stop saying hustle and just say go faster? Like, don't tell your players to hustle. Tell them to go faster. I mean, that's just the word that we've used. I think people have taken that really out of context. There are those workaholics. Like, you know, like my mom, she owned her own business for a while. She just sold it and exited pretty handsomely. And she built a home health care business for the past 8 years. Mm. And it was one of the top 25 in Michigan.
Mm.
And I remember talking to her like 10 o'clock at night. I'm like, yeah, I'm just shutting down for the night. She goes, oh, no, I got like at least another hour of work. And I'm like, Mom, you're the boss. Like, you don't need to do that. That's what you have employees for. You know, like, that's what you pay people for. She goes, no, I'll just do it. It's easier if I do it. And I'm like, oh, So even now, you know, with my business, like, I outsource things. I know what my strengths are. And creating certain videos and doing these different graphics and stuff are just not – that's just not what I do, you know? So I outsource that, and I have other people do it for me and totally get, like, the burnout and the go-go-go and the hustle porn and, like, all that. But I also believe that it does take hard work.
Yes,
to,
for sure.
You know, to get stuff done. But I 100% agree with you that you have to recharge, and that's where people are falling short. I absolutely feel that as long as you get your 7 or 8 hours, like, don't sleep 3 or 4 hours a day and not drink water and eat like crap. And, you know, like, there's a way that you can be productive and be healthy, because we all know that if you're not healthy, your work will not be healthy.
Right. Right. Well, there's this great anecdote. There's this great anecdote or sort of example of Jeff Weiner, who's the CEO of LinkedIn. And he takes a 2-hour block every day. He divides it into 4 30-minute chunks and then inserts those chunks into between what he has scheduled. And this is like, he calls it the importance of scheduling nothing. And this is literally time for him to take a walk, take a nap, sit back and just think, you know, basically to do nothing, to literally have, quote, unproductive time. It's a quarter of his day, 25% of his day. He schedules it in to do nothing. But what he's actually doing is he's going sprint, goes really hard, and then he takes a break. Sprint, break, sprint, break. And what's so brilliant about it is it not only recharges his mental batteries so that when he goes back for another sprint, he's got a full battery. You know, our brains are like our cell phone batteries, right? He's got a full battery when he goes back at it. But also in that break, he accesses a part of his brain that's it's called the default mode network, which is which is basically like the creativity centers. This is the part of the brain that's more playful, that's more free associative, that's biased toward unusual connections. And the part of your brain that pays attention, the part right behind your forehead, the prefrontal cortex, that part goes quiet when you go for a walk. That part goes quiet when you take a nap. And this other part, which is like a mohawk right down your head, the default mode network lights up. And so it's like, and so think of it this way. If you're not taking breaks, you're not accessing your deep problem solving capacity. You're not accessing your creative capacity. And so the most brilliant, and if you look throughout history, this is the way, you know, achievers and writers and inventors and, you know, everyone from Leonardo da Vinci to Thomas Edison, they all did this. You know, Charles Dickens, the examples are numerous. But you look at the way they worked, and they didn't work, you know, they had this, you know, Charles Darwin, they had these sprint break kind of things. And what we found, interestingly, is that there's an ultradian rhythm. So we all know the circadian rhythms, which is the kind of get tired at night, feel awake in the morning, right? But there's a smaller ultradian rhythm, which has to do with our hormone and energy systems, and it's about 90 minutes long. And so basically you can stay focused for about 90 minutes. And after that point, you need to take a break. If you don't, you'll be highly unproductive, and basically you'll find yourself surfing Facebook. I mean, when we get tired, we get distracted, right? And so instead of and Facebook's going to drain that battery even more. Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, whatever, right? It's going to drain that battery even more. It's not, because it requires attention. Anything that requires attention costs you something neurally.
Yep.
And so what you want to do is restore the attention. And three of the best ways to restore attention is go for a walk, especially in green space. There's been research out of University of Michigan showing that if you go in nature, it restores your attention even more.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Take a 20-minute nap.
Yep.
It takes 7 minutes to fall asleep. So if you want to do it perfectly, it's a 27-minute nap. Or meditate. These are the three biggest empirically proven ways to restore your focus. And then you can go back at another 90-minute sprint. But basically, unplug as far away from what you were doing. Leave your phone at the office, leave it at your desk, whatever you got to do, and get out, get some sun, go outside, and then come back. And you'll be shocked if you work in that sprint break, how much you're able to get done every day by working less time, which is why it's so crazy.
You know, we weren't even talking about this 10 years ago. Do you realize that?
I know.
We weren't even talking about this 10 years ago. It was all that woo-woo, like, what are you talking about? You know, like, I'm not going to meditate. Like, what are you talking about? You know, now everybody's talking about meditating, right? There's apps.
Yeah.
You know, I use the Headspace app. You know, for meditations and mindfulness and things like, I love the Headspace app. And there's a couple other good ones. But 10 years ago, in 2009, when I became a drill instructor, it was got to multitask and get a lot done, because you can have many things going on at the same time and you'll get more done. And, you know, and it just, I don't know. I was like, I guess if you think so, you know, like, we'll try it. So everybody tried to be really good at multitasking. You know, and everybody claimed that I've got the best multitask. You know, all the speakers at the time were like, oh, I've got the best multitask and I've got the best this, you know, whatever. 5 years later in 2014, I'm speaking at a resilience event, and all of a sudden it's how to overcome burnout.
Right.
And time management. Mm-hmm. And like all these other things. And now, you know, you see, you know, best meditation practices and how to quiet your soul and how to quiet your mind. And how it's like, the pendulum has swung the other complete direction. And I'm wondering how far we're going to keep going. Like when they start instituting naps at school, my mind is going to be blown. and then upset that I wasn't in high school when they instituted naps. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Have you seen these schools in Japan?
No.
They don't do any homework. Zero. They never give homework.
Yeah.
And they have a 15-minute meditation time twice a day.
Love it.
In school, they have a 15-minute meditation time. They stop what they're doing. It's their meditation time. They quiet the mind. They do 15 minutes of meditation, and then they go back to schoolwork.
Yeah. Makes perfect
sense. This is in Japan.
Well, it makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. And schools haven't quite started. They've started instituting a little bit of this. There's some yoga classes and things in schools, and schools are starting their days a little bit later because they realize they're cutting off, you know, they're cutting off the hour of sleep that kids need the most, which is the hour, the last hour of the night, which is when they have REM sleep, which literally gives them more emotional control, kickstarts their creative processes, REM sleep, right? And empties out their short-term memory so they can learn again. So if you're cutting off that hour of sleep before they go to school, you're basically compromising the very reason for your existence, which is to help kids learn.
Wow.
So again, like the fact that I'm in this situation right now. My daughter's school starts at 8 o'clock and it should start at 8:50. I mean, just in terms of we're constantly, she's losing about an hour of sleep a night. I know it. And it's very clear, like, you know, it's as a parent, right? The shifts, she started last.
What if they go to bed an hour early? I mean, wouldn't that make up for it if they went to bed an hour early?
Yeah. So if you can get that habit into place. And so we've been getting her to go to bed an hour earlier, but she needs to be going to bed 2 hours earlier from when she was going to bed. And part of this is about chronotypes, which is your kind of biological tendency. For, you know, night owls, right? You have these sort of three different chronotypes.
Oh, that's me. I'm a night owl. I can't shut my brain off.
And the night owls get punished because of the way that our systems are set up for everything to start so early. But biologically, ideally, we should be listening to our bodies, right, and waking up when our bodies are ready to wake up and going to sleep when they're ready to go to sleep. But that said, when it comes to naps, Nike, Google, Uber, Zappos, Huffington Post, Facebook, Ben and Jerry's, they've all got nap pods in their offices right now.
So cool. That is so cool.
Is that cool?
I heard about that. That is so cool.
Yeah, so they're paying people to sleep on the job. How's that?
No, like, I want that job. You know what I mean? Like,
because we all get tired in the afternoon. The sleep researchers call us biphasic sleepers. So we have sleep about 8 hours at night. We're supposed to sleep about 8 hours a night, and then we're supposed to take a little nap in the afternoon. It's knit into our DNA. And so most of us power through and say, oh, there's something wrong with feeling tired in the afternoon. But if you look at the sleep science, no, just take a 27-minute nap, and then you'll be twice as productive, twice as creative, and frankly, twice as happy. So you'll stay longer at that job that you're at. And so these companies know this. They're no dummies. Their people aren't getting less done. They're getting more done. But you've got to be willing to break with convention in order to start implementing some of these. So what the brain science says is the best way to live and best way to work.
Yep. And it's the same way with your toddler. That's why your toddler needs to go down for a nap at like 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, because they're just a hellacious monster.
No, that's right. That's
like right. if you put them down for a nap, they wake up and you're like, oh, you're such a nice child.
Exactly.
You know, like, because they're going crazy. Like right after lunch, you're like, oh my God, this kid is being destructive and crying and like, oh, you need a nap. But you know what? Adults, they do the same thing. Adults throw temper tantrums on the way home from work. Adults throw temper tantrums and get pissed off. You know, that's why they're out there smoking in the smoke pit at, you know, 2, 3 o'clock and they're like, oh my God, I got to get out of here. And, you know, it's like, go take a nap. Go take a nap. You'll be all right. You know, so
go take a nap and reboot your energy through something natural, like a nap, as opposed to something unnatural, like a Red Bull, right? Or a Rockstar or some energy drink, right? And get all the benefits of a boost in energy and clarity and focus without all the downside consequences of, you know, weight gain and obesity and diabetes and all the other things that will come along with that road, right?
100%. Yep, 100%. So let's quickly shift and talk about Brain by Design and Deep Change Project as we start to close the show. Talk about Brain by Design first, and then we'll wrap up with Deep Change Project and kind of how that went.
Yeah. So Brain by Design. So I basically am a kind of content creator. I create courses about the science of productivity, the science of happiness, the science of habit formation. And so Brain by Design is primarily that. We did a lot of this in Jordan, you know, sort of content creation or curriculum design. And so, what I've done with Brain by Design is sort of translate that skill set into building kind of brain, really taking all the best science, it's sort of science help instead of self-help, right? And packaging it into courses, digesting lots of information, lots of science, and then making it understandable, usable, applicable, and doable. You know, I think the biggest thing that scientists lack when you look at the research, they're brilliant, and it's so fun to read, but there's a big gap between knowing and doing. And so I've really designed the courses to be courses about application and really getting this stuff moving in your life. But it's really a crash course on the science of habits. My habits one, the science of productivity, my productivity one, and then a sort of positive psychology and happiness research. So that's what Brain by Design is. And then this past year, I've been undergoing what I call the Deep Change Project, and I'm trying to rewire my brain fundamentally in 2019. So every Perfect. 2 months, I'm sort of tackling a different aspect or pillar of who I am. Started out with reducing stress and increasing mindfulness. These March and April are about getting into states of focus and flow as the kind of default instead of distraction. May and June are about moving from negative to positive, really, really leaning into resetting my brain to look for opportunity and look for the good. July and August will be about right. creativity, really dialing up the creativity in my life. September and October are going from fearful to fearless. I think fear is an extinguishable phenomenon. I don't think it's 95% of the time, it's just not helpful. And then November and December are from self-oriented to other-oriented or sort of getting out of ego. So I'm really trying to use a lot of in some sense, I'm living the science that I'm always teaching about in my own life and then telling the story of how it's going. And then I have a Facebook group and things that people can kind of join to be a part of and kind of create their own deep change project of sort of things they care about and things they want to improve on in their own life. But I'm introducing all sorts of interesting stuff. I'm using every piece of latest brain tech out there. I'm using anything and everything you can imagine, and I'm trying to measure it all. And it's like a genuine brain hacking experiment.
Nice. I like that. So where do you see it going in the next couple of years?
It's been interesting. You know, I think a couple things. One is the reason I bite off each one in 2 month chunks is because a habit takes about 2 months to form.
Yeah. 66 days for new habits.
That's right, 66 days, yep. So brain tech and neurotech are kind of, they're not on the map for the average person just yet. That will explode in the next 5 years. And it will be everywhere. And so in some sense, that I'm trying to push brain hacking, put that on the map, put that on people's radars. To again, think about this, like I can get in the driver's seat of my own brain. I can actually learn how and move the needle on fundamentally reinventing myself. This is sort of personal growth and development at a new level, right? Because we've never had these types of tools. We've never had the ability to sort of dial it up this intensely. And so there's a knowledge component, which is just getting the basics of how the brain works and how to kind of pull those levers and knobs. But then there's the application, which is what actually works, right? What is actually and again, I'm going to be going into risky territory. You know, I'll be doing direct, you know, Halo Neuroscience. A lot of these companies have been gracious enough to send me their products, and so I try them out. Halo Neuroscience is transcranial direct stimulation, so it's actually, they call it neural priming. So they actually stimulate your motor cortex, which is about movement. And so I'm learning the guitar right now, and I want to see if using Halo Neuroscience, I can increase the speed at which I'm learning. Their claim is that you can increase how fast you learn by 50%. So this is directed a lot of athletes use Halo, train with Halo. But I'm using Apollo Neuroscience. I'm learning all the different brain techs that are reducing my stress, accelerating my neuroplasticity. And then again, I'm getting all these foundation habits in place. So my yoga, my meditation, my reading, my, you know, all the stuff that's really the foundation. And then I'm accelerating it with the tech. So I think that's where it's going.
I love it.
Is we're all going to be talking about this in 5 years.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, this will be emotional intelligence, brain hacking, neuroplasticity, resilience. This is going to be a thing and the new currency in 2025. Like, this is going to be it. That's just what I think. I see where, because we're talking about the woo-woo, we're talking about the yoga, we're talking about all this other stuff. We're talking about more about self-love, right? I think in, you know, 2025, you know, we're going to have meditation times. You know, kids, meditation time, you know, it's like, cool, okay, got it. You know, there'll be classes, like offered classes at a college on how to quiet your mind. You know what I mean? Like, it'll be part of like a curriculum. Like, I don't know what way it looks like, but that's what I see. So, we're going to be talking about it, a lot about it. So, it's always Yale and Harvard and Stanford and, you know, Brown and, you know, all the other, you know, the Ivy League schools, if you will, you know, I think probably because University of Michigan has one of the top rated medical facilities, you know, in any college, they'll probably be a part of it, but it'll be those schools, those Ivy League schools and, you know, business schools and things like that, that'll find a way to integrate it into the curriculum and then everybody will adopt it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a huge quiet revolution that's happening. The cognitive, it's like the second cognitive revolution, and it will change the way we do everything.
Yep. 100%. So let's close the show by doing a shameless plug. You can plug friends, quotes, websites, Facebook, your programs, products, services, whatever it is that you want the audience to know or to do. Shameless plug moment. Go.
Well, and we talked about this earlier, but so of those three courses, the habits course, it's a $200 course. Because I think your listeners are awesome and I think you're awesome. I actually want to give that away for free. So if you text the word brain to the number 44144, it will spit you back a link where you can sign up for my Master Your Habits course absolutely free. So again, it's text the word brain to the number 44144. And you'll get updates and email lists. My website is brainbydesign.com. You can find that Facebook group, Deep Change Project. Search for that on Facebook. Welcome to join that. I'd love to have you as part of that as well.
Awesome. Yeah, check that out, man. So as we close, give us a nugget of knowledge that will motivate, transcend, and inspire someone to take action today.
I think the biggest insight that to walk away with is you have deep potential sitting inside your head right now. And whether or not you access it depends on what you do. Your brain doesn't care who you are. It only cares what you do. And so every single neuron has the capacity to expand its literally like its actual efficiency by up to 3,000 times. So
wow.
think about your brain. So a neuron that's not well insulated with myelin, it's poorly insulated versus one that's fully insulated and operating at its peak. The difference between those two neurons is a 3,000 time difference in terms of efficiency, speed, and strength. So think about your brain, you 3,000 times better than what you currently are. It's that type of amazing, crazy potential that you have sitting dormant, latent, asleep inside your brain right now, that if you can access and learn to harness that power, you will become a version of yourself that even you don't recognize right now. And that's really the message that I hope to get across.
Very cool. James, I want to thank you for coming on the show, man. It has been absolutely an honor of mine to have you on the show and to talk about the neuroplasticity and how we can rewire our brain and actually hack into your brain in order for you to be successful, to grow, which is the most important aspect of the neuroplasticity, is you actually have room to grow as a person. You don't have to stay the same way that you currently are. And so that's good news. And man, you're a smart dude, man. I love talking brain with you.
Man, I love talking brain with you, Sean. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Hopefully we'll catch each other again at an event and catch up.
Okay. Awesome.
So Life Transformation Radio listeners, an amazing guest impacting the world around him. If anything that James has talked about today resonates with you, please contact him. His Facebook and LinkedIn link are right there. Go check out Brain by Design and check out what he's doing with the Deep Change Project that was launched. And he's just an amazing dude, full of heart and compassion, and he's using the brain as the vehicle for growth. And I just absolutely love where he's going with this. Again, if anything resonated with you, please connect with James. He has that free resource. Connect with that and get into the group. As we close, please subscribe to Life Transformation Radio, and it's available wherever you're comfortable listening to podcasts. So with that, I always end with living your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the core values that you hold deep in your heart. And I call this living your brand. So until next episode, live a great life.